We present at this time the 150th in a series of programs designed to help you know your city. These programs are planned to keep you informed about Kalamazoo, its government, civic organizations, community activities, plans, and problems. Next Sunday, the First Presbyterian Church of Kalamazoo will celebrate its 100th anniversary. Our program tonight will present the story of this church down through the years, from the beginning to the present moment. To bring you the story, here's the Director of Public Affairs for Station WKZO, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. The beginnings of the First Presbyterian Church in Kalamazoo go back well over a century. In pioneer days in Michigan, Presbyterians and Congregationalists worked together to found churches under an agreement known as the Plan of Union. Each church decided whether it would adopt the Congregationalist or the Presbyterian form of worship. Kalamazoo's early settlers were largely from New England and New York, and a large proportion of them were Congregationalists. But there were also many from Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New Jersey who were Presbyterians. By 1836, they had joined hands to organize a church and adopted at first the Presbyterian form of church government. Then in 1842, they changed, perhaps because the predominance of people of New England stock had become stronger, and they then adopted the congregational form. For 12 years, the people of these two denominations worshiped together in a white frame church with a belfry. The pulpit stood on a raised platform, and the church Bible, bound in red morocco and embossed in gold, rested upon a scarlet cushion. There was no organ, but the church did have a bell. Gradually, the population of the little village of Kalamazoo grew, and among the new residents, there were a great many Presbyterians. Naturally, they wanted a church of their own, one in which they could worship God in accordance with the way they had been taught from childhood. So it was decided that they should establish a separate church of their own. 21 members were dismissed from the Congregational Church for this purpose. 30 joined on profession of faith, and the first action of the session was to receive 58 others. That made 109 original members. Who were these people? You'll recognize a lot of the names which identify streets and buildings to this day. All are American names with English and Scotch and Dutch overtones.
Edwards, Taylor, Gilbert, Winslow, Cortinius, Walbridge, Tomlinson, Parsons, Bulge, Sherwood, Cobb, Davis, Roberts, Hoyt, Hayes, Trowbridge, Den Bleicher, McNair.
An old diary, the diary of A.C. Roberts, which relates the steps taken to start this new church, is still in possession of the parish. It was a long process, one which required more than a year. A lot was acquired opposite the village square, and a white colonial church was built, the whole cost being just $5,000. And on February the 6th, 1849, the history of the First Presbyterian Church of Kalamazoo begins. There is no way to measure what has been wrought during this century of life by the church. It has profoundly influenced the upbringing of generation after generation of Kalamazoo youth. It has brought inspiration and ideals and comfort to thousands. It has instilled high principles of Christian living into the lives of many boys and girls, men and women, who have lived out their lives in this community. One way to tell the story of these 100 years is to divide it into three parts, each dealing with a period during which the people have worshipped in a different church building. There was first the 35 years in the white colonial church, the years from 1849 to the end of 1883. It was a time during which Kalamazoo was a quiet village, but a time of vigorous growth. It began with the anti-slavery crusade. It saw hundreds of lads march off to fight in a great civil war. And then it brought, following the war, a great period of prosperity and expansion. In Kalamazoo, it was an era of railroad building, of the start of papermaking, and salary growing. During all these years, a man named Luther H. Trask was clerk of the church. He kept the minutes in a strong, straight hand. The records are succinct to the point, oft-times of curtness, and they seem almost to be a photograph of the man who wrote them, an upright man, holding no nonsense, a godly man whose faith left him untempted before all the surging currents of the world. Those records tell of the firm hand which the church kept upon its members. Wrote Mr. Trask,
the session having heard with deep regret rumors publicly expressed outside the pale of any church, derogatory to the Christian character of Mr. Ransom A. Fairbanks. Resolved that said R. A. Fairbanks be cited to appear before the session of this church on the 19th day of May next to answer to the following charges, to wit, 1. Common fame charges you with a violation of the laws of this land in forcing your way through one of the toll gates of the Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids Plank Road. 2. Common fame charges you with falsehood. 3. Common fame charges you with frequent and gross exhibitions of an angry temper and the frequent use of vulgar and unchristian language. Witnesses in proof of this charge, Mr. D.T. Fox, Mr. E.H. Porter, Mr. T.
There was a long trial starting May 19, 1859. Not until December 31st did the session find the first and third charges sustained and the second not sustained. But on that date, because Fairbanks had not acknowledged his error or showed any penitence, he was excommunicated from the church. The session, not in haste, but firm in its responsibilities, had done its duty. Those were the days when the 196 articles of the Longer Catechism were repeated by every boy until familiar, and the 107 articles of the Shorter Catechism learned by heart.
What is the chief end of man?
To glorify God and enjoy him forever.
What is the fifth commandment?
The fifth commandment is, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
What is meant by father and mother?
By father and mother are meant not only natural parents, but all superiors in age and gifts, especially such as by God's ordinance are over us.
There are many things which happened during those first 35 years. The Sabbath school was established. The Presbyterian Synod of Michigan established a female seminary in Kalamazoo. The Ladies' Society of the Church was organized in 1873. Foreign missions were supported by the people. And then, on the night of December 5th, 1883, came the cry,
Fire!
No one had seen it start, for the blinds of the church had been closed. But suddenly, smoke and flame broke through the roof, and the old church was completely destroyed. The trustees recorded in their minutes,
Our holy and our beautiful house, where our fathers praised thee, is burned up with fire, and all pleasant things are laid waste.
And so, we come to the second period, that of the brick church, which cost $50,000 instead of $5,000, as the first church did. It stood at the northeast corner of Rose and South Streets. It wasn't colonial, with pleasing simplicity of line, as its predecessor had been, and it wasn't Gothic, as its successor was to be. It was a well-built building, scornful of ornament or symbolic design, but it pleased the people very much, and it served them for more than 40 years. It was Kalamazoo's early years as a city, the years when electricity and telephones and streetcars and many factories came to town. The Presbyterians were better off financially, but they spelled out sin with capital letters. Dancing, card playing, and the theater were condemned. The Sabbath school became the Sunday school. The Christian Endeavor movement started in 1907. There was much missionary activity, but the female seminary, though it served several generations of young ladies, fell by the wayside before the end of the brick church. From 109 members in 1849, the church grew to 1,848 members in 1926. And then, on the evening of July 6, 1926, came that cry again.
Fire!
And the brick church was no more. Already, a new church house had been erected, and by 1930, the beautiful new Gothic church was ready, the third house of worship during the century. But it cost much money. There were $150,000 of bonds outstanding in the dark days of the Depression. But the debt was whittled down and paid. The church had entered a new era, an era of Christian service. The trial of Ransom A. Fairbanks in 1859 sounded unreal and perhaps a little unimportant in this new era. So did the condemnation of dancing and card playing and theaters that the church so earnestly adopted in 1885. Somehow there was a new emphasis, a new spirit. But no institution lives wholly in the present or in its hopes for the future. It can never escape its heritage. And in any church, that heritage is preserved, enhanced, and passed on by the people under the leadership of their minister. Who are the ministers who have served this church? Charles Starring, centennial historian of the church, will tell you.
Well, in the first 100 years of its history, the First Presbyterian Church has had 15 pastors. But 11 of them came in the first 50 years, and only 4 in the second half century. Perhaps Presbyterian pastors, like the nation itself, were more footloose in those early years. The first pastor of the present society was Ovid P. Hoyt. Like many of his parishioners and several of his successors, he came from New England. So far as we know, all of our pastors have been graduates of colleges, and all except George Hunting of theological seminaries as well. Hunting's ordination was delayed by the doubts of a Wisconsin presbytery as to whether, as they put it, a candidate who lacked training in Hebrew and systematic theology could be a successful minister. Yet Hunting became one of our best-loved pastors. He served the church well through the fire of 1883 and the building of the Bricks Church that stood on the corner of South and Rose Streets. The longest pastorate has been that of John Wirt Dunning, who has returned from Florida to take part in the centennial observance. For 22 years, beginning in 1916, he served the First Church with a success only partly measured by a 500% increase in membership and the completion of the church plant in West South Street. Today, the church enjoys a leadership that may be unique among Presbyterian churches in this country. Its pastors, Paul Silas Heath and Charles K. Johnson, are co-pastors, equal leaders of a church society whose program of activities would astound the pioneer founders of a century ago.
Thank you, Mr. Starring. Now, what of the future? What is the spirit of today's church? What does it seek to do? How does it face its second century? Here is the Reverend Paul Silas Heath, pastor of the church as it turns its first century.
We are grateful for and proud of the 100 years that lie behind us. On January 1st, 1848, Mr. A.C. Roberts, a leader in the church, wrote in his diary, "The past has been one of general health in our family. We have enjoyed the favors and smiles of heaven, for which we should be grateful and endeavor to live more to the glory of God. That is the way we feel today." This celebration of the past reaches its fullest significance only as we turn our eyes to the future. We believe in the future because we believe in the past, and we set our aims and hopes high and dedicate ourselves to a new day in which we shall serve the future as our forebears served the past. We go forth into a world as full of problems and tensions and challenge as any the past has contained. Our purpose will be to meet the future with the same faith and the same courage which characterized those who have gone before. We shall seek to create, along with other churches, a moral and spiritual climate through worship and through the teaching and living of the Christian faith, which shall bring to men the knowledge of the gracious salvation which God holds forth in his goodness to all men. We shall seek to persuade men to put their trust in the unseen verities and finalities of life, and thus armed, go out into the business of the world, its commerce, its politics, its culture, seeking peace with all men, working for that community of believers which shall bestow respect and worth and dignity on all men, and which shall lead to the city of God on earth, and at last to the kingdom of God in heaven.
Thank you, Reverend Heath. It is appropriate that we should end this story with the voices of the future, the voices of the boys and girls of the Westminster Choir of the First Presbyterian Church.
You have been listening to the 150th program in the series Know Your City, presenting tonight a program in observance of the centennial of the First Presbyterian Church of Kalamazoo. Next week, a program about Boy Scouts in Kalamazoo in observance of National Boy Scout Week. This has been another program presented in the public interest by the Fetzer Broadcasting Company.
WKZO Kalamazoo. Today is a special day for someone you know, a birthday, anniversary, or new baby homecoming event.